listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right. It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. With more info and show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live. 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. My guests all this hour are making their debut here on the Sheena Metal Experience. They are both amazingly terrific actors that I'm so excited to have on the show. And they're in a show called Bakersfield Mist, now at the Fountain Theater through December 18th. And I can't wait to talk to them about their work and about this wonderful show. Please welcome to the Sheena Metal Experience, Jenny O'Hara and Nick Ullett. It's so great to have you both here. Thanks for being here in studio with me, too. That's always a treat.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with you give me a little background on yourself in the entertainment business and you know when how young you were when you knew this is where you wanted to be forever.
Oh, it wasn't until I was thrown out of Carnegie Tech after having spent a year there on scholarship and having just a fabulous time, and then suddenly I had to work really hard for the privilege of being an actor. So I wormed my way back in to school. But I went away that summer to do summer stock, actually to go be a beach bum with girlfriends, but it was so boring I couldn't stand it, and I found it at the theater. And I ended up doing some very good work there, and they wrote back to the school, and they took me back, but I'd already decided to go to New York. So just for the semester, you know how that is.
So was it that you thought you wanted to be an actor, but then when you got into school, it was too hard? It was just not fun? And
it was that I was an actor in high school in my local drama school, and everybody...
Sure.
Assumed that I was going to be that, so just to be oppositional, I wasn't going to be that.
Oh, okay. So what were you going to be at Carnegie?
A nurse.
Oh, okay.
I snuck off and got... Well, at Carnegie, I was studying to be an actor, but I had snuck off and gotten a nursing scholarship to a college in the Midwest that my parents knew nothing about because I had forged their
signatures. You were going to run away and join the opposite of the circus.
Yeah.
Because everybody expected you to be in the circus.
Exactly.
And then did you just kind of keep getting pulled back because it was really who you were and where you belonged, and then you just kept coming back to it?
Well, that summer, you know, when I really had to work my tail off to set a foot on the stage, I was running lights, I was building sets, I thought, God, you know, this is really what I want to do. Nobody is now telling me I have to do this. I'm completely free, so now I want to do this. And I went back the next summer as a member of the company and got my equity card at, I think, 17 or 18, and that was it.
Now, was it that you, when you were doing plays in high school, that you were just naturally very good, so everybody kept saying, you should be an actor, you should be an actor, you should really pursue this, and you weren't really getting to make the decision for yourself.
Yeah, that was exactly it. And I think that I was good, but I was very theatrical. So, you know, I had to get a lot of that knocked out of me. And I knew that so that when I went to New York, I pursued Lee Strasberg and made him take me into the classes and worked with people like that, Sandy Meisner, Lee Strasberg.
Wonderful.
Serious people who would really ground me and get the razzle-dazzle out.
And then how did you make the transition into film and television? Did you start doing projects in New York?
Oh, yeah. I've done Broadway shows in New York.
Right. Well, obviously, you were in the theater in New York.
Right. And we all did soaps.
Right.
And made commercials. So that was the kind of film or television that you could do there. And then I moved out here in the early 70s and began to go back and forth. But I began to work in television right away.
Because I remember when I was a kid, and I don't mean for this to be a when I was
sure.
a kid story, Jenny,
but
you were on every single show on television. You couldn't watch a show that you didn't either have a part on or you were a guest star on. I mean, I think you hit the rounds of every network show in the 70s and 80s that ever aired, even for one episode.
I did pretty well.
And that must be fun because all those shows are in reruns. So everybody knows you from somewhere. And you continue to do that. I mean, you just were in Devil.
Yep.
And you were fantastic.
Thank you.
I host a paranormal show here. That's what I was doing right before you guys got here.
Oh, yeah.
And my co-host I like to call her a little mentally challenged with television. If it didn't happen when she was real little, she doesn't know. And I said, you know, Jenny O'Hara, she was Devil. And you kind of were Devil. So it's not, you can't just say in Devil. But how fantastic that you've continued to get to play all the different, because, you know, that rumor in Hollywood that if you're not 25, nobody will ever cast you for anything again, but you've worked consistently all kinds of characters all over the map, straight parts, character roles, and there's no box for you. And
no.
I think that's beautiful.
I know. I'm thrilled. Couldn't be happier.
What do you think the secret is? Is it that you just keep saying yes and showing up with a smile and you deliver what you need to?
I think that about wraps it up, yeah.
You know? How easy is that?
But I have a new philosophy. A door opens, walk through.
Nice.
Instead of trying to manage a career, the idea of managing something, manipulating it, controlling it, it can't be done. It's all too ephemeral. So door opens, I'm there.
I'm the same way. And as soon as I learned that sort of surrender process and stopped trying to control my career, quote unquote, then every door in the world opened up.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think it's just about relaxing and just saying yes. And even if I'm not sure if I should do something, I say yes anyhow. And then lo and behold, it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's fair. Now, Nick, how about you? How old were you when you started on the stage and when you really knew that this was where you belonged?
I think I was 3 and a half. I wanted to be, and in fact, I was Good King Wenceslas.
Beautiful. At 3 and a half.
Yeah. And my mother made me a costume, and I knew absolutely, completely that that was it. And from then on, that's all I've really ever done.
You know, I never knew that.
Yeah,
and you're totally happy with just doing this. You're in your right place, and this is where you belong.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful.
I've done things, you know, to keep myself alive.
Sure,
but I've always come back to this, and mainly to theater. I just love that whole thing of a group of people putting something on. In fact, to Jenny's horror, I mean, ideally, we would live in a truck and we'd just go from town to town doing plays. You know?
Right.
We would open the back of the van and fold out canvas scenery and set it up in the town.
Like a live action Punch and Judy show.
Yeah, kind of like
exactly. It's a Nick and Jenny show.
Yes, it's an idea
fantastic.
That leaves me so cold, I can't tell you.
But that is a beautiful thing, right? And for people that don't know, Jenny and Nick are married. How long have you been married?
25 years
this beautiful. Year. Beautiful. And I think, what is there a more beautiful thing than being able to live and love someone and also do art with them? I mean, how fantastic is that? I'm a little with you. I don't know that I would want to do it out of the back of the van. I would prefer theaters hire me. But what a and you see a lot of married couples travel around for years at a time and do theater.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic because you can be together. You can see other places. And you also get to do what you love. I mean, that's ideally the best situation in the world, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's really great.
Yeah, I don't think Jenny has the great love of the road that I do.
Yeah.
You know, I came to this country in 1964 as half of a comedy team. And we played every single state in the Union, apart from Alaska and Hawaii, by 1969. So in 5 years, we went everywhere in the country. It was fabulous. Terrific way to see the country. Yeah.
Well, that's very much that old theater ideology, right? Of the wagon rolls up and everyone pops out. Then we all set up the tent and we do each other's makeup and we build the sets and we're in the town for a week and then we pack everything up, put it back in the wagon and roll on. I mean, that's very much like a very beautiful 16th century, you know, theatrical touring.
Yeah, well, of course, the bit you've left out is where the peasants turn on you. Beat you to death
in the
with
marketplace.
Rocks.
Pelt you with pears.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
I did forget that part. But I think the beautiful thing about that for people that have never done it, and maybe that's what you picked up from Summerstock, which kind of renewed, Jenny, your love of theater.
Oh boy.
Is that there is a tribal family feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think if you're lucky, you get that when you're on a TV show as a regular, you get that when you do a film, you get that when you do a play. And the idea in theater that everybody's kind of helping everybody else out. And I think that actors that have never done anything but large budget film and television where you can't touch that because it's not your union and
right.
This person can't touch that and this bagel's for you and that bagel's for that guy. I think they miss the fun of the I'm running the sets and I'm pulling the ropes and I'm working on the weights and I'm making Peter Pan fly and I painted the set. That's the magic of theater. Is
right.
That you?
One of the best things about theater in a way is that you don't usually do it. I mean, obviously you can do it out of your hometown, but you are often hired to go to somewhere where you haven't been before. You are placed with a group of people you haven't met before, and your job is literally to create a piece of theater.
It's wonderful.
And you have to trust each other. So this sense of being a tribe, of being together, of being a village, a family, is imposed upon you, but it's really fun because you make connections and you learn how to deal with people, and you know, there is a great sense of relief. You actually get something on, you've learnt it, it's done, you're out there, you're doing it. It's wonderful, you know. I can't imagine a better life.
So, Jenny, you're in for all of that, except you'd rather stay in L.A. or New York and do theater where you are instead of traveling around and the back of the Prius opens up and
yeah.
you pull out the plastic tree. And
I like the pre-Broadway tour where you fly from place to place.
Oh, okay.
And you're
nice.
In a fabulous hotel.
Yeah, I kind of like
but
that,
But you know
too.
You're kind of yeah. heading for the big time at the end of the line there.
Right.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay even if I'm even staying in just a nice motel. I'm just not crazy about the from place to place in the car. You know,
yeah.
if there were like little portholes we could step through and move from city to city, that would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But in between city to city, there are some places in this country that I don't know that I want to drive through them again.
No, it's kind of, yeah. I'm not going to say where, but yeah.
Yeah.
There are parts that are a little creepy.
Yeah, there are
especially late at night, you just want to zoom on through.
Right. Places where you think, is this where they filmed Deliverance?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's places, a lot of places like
the,
that.
The Twilight Zone callbacks.
Exactly.
Oh,
right. But now when you go on location for a film,
yeah.
is that different? Because you fly into a place, and even if it's a place that might be a little scary, but you're still, that becomes your second home for a month.
Oh, yeah. You go all over the place. I mean, cast members go. One of the guys in Devil is a huge big guy, looks so rough and tough, and I thought, whoa, Jack, I'm avoiding him. Well, we've shot in Toronto. We shot in Toronto because, unfortunately, Pennsylvania couldn't make up its mind about funding the tax incentives, and M. Night Shyamalan has shot everything in Pennsylvania.
That's right.
But the schedule couldn't wait, so he had to jump and jump to Toronto. But I ended up spending more time at the Royal Museum in Toronto with this guy who I thought was so scary. We went to see Precious together, and we both cried.
Oh.
It was so sweet.
And sometimes you make family where
oh,
you
yeah.
had no idea you were going to make family.
Yeah, always.
And usually yeah. every project you work on, you make at least one good friend out of it,
yeah.
and sometimes more.
Yeah, and Nick is very good at that. I kind of... I just cut the lines and go on. But
but Nick, you keep the theater tribe
he's
together.
He's brilliant yeah. at yeah. it. Yes. Yeah. So I have a lot of friends because of Nick.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is.
I have a great belief in... I got this from my parents that, you know, I can remember my father saying, you know, family's fine, but you need friends, you know, and you do. And I think you also have to work at it a bit. You know, not drive them crazy, but you know there are people I call once or twice a year who are still really my friends and who I can pick up the conversation with the minute we get back together again.
Well, and that's kind of the beautiful thing about email too, is that you can
yeah.
you can stay in touch with people
yeah.
that might be completely out of your time zone.
Yep.
And you know, as busy as I get here, and sometimes I feel like I only see my friends when they sit in on the show with me, I did the same kind of thing this summer. I thought, I'm going to make a list of everybody in my life who really matters and make sure that every couple of weeks I just send a little note and say hi, or I send a
what
text
a great
or a call.
Idea.
Because sometimes, like the shoemaker's child, your friends are the ones that kind of get left behind
right.
while you're answering all the emails for business.
Right.
And I thought,
exactly.
no, it's important to touch base and mm-hmm. just and be thankful for people that are your tribe. Because that's I think in this business, all the kind of spooky, creepy things about the entertainment business, the beautiful thing is the wonderful tribe that you make
yes.
and get to have forever. And to be around like-minded people all the time. So I think a lot of creative people grow up if they grow up in a non-creative environment, they kind of feel like aliens. And it's when they meet other creative people that they feel like they finally fit in. And this is kind of a town where a bunch of people who don't fit in all fit in together.
Right, exactly. And it's an extraordinary thing. And that's the thing that Nick spoke of, picking up the conversation where you left it off. I've been running into friends lately, partially because of this play, that I haven't seen since the early 70s.
Awesome.
And you just pick up the conversation.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And I think it's unique to actors, I have to say.
Now, when you first came out in the early 70s, Jenny, obviously you came out for film and TV, which was so big in the
yeah.
early 70s. Did you get involved in what was going on with our theater scene then?
Not so much, no. I came out with a boyfriend who was doing some television work and sort of nosed around, and one of my agents from New York had just moved out here, so I came back the next year, and I went with her, and she was one of my bridesmaids.
Wow.
I've been with her for, what, 41 or 42
yeah.
years? I mean, remarkable relationships, I have
That's
to say.
That's fantastic.
And they represent Nick, too. Susie and Ro are both extraordinary.
That's wonderful.
It is. It's really great. And I began to move into it, you know. They can get you started. There were some casting directors from New York out here, so they knew me from New York, so they could sort of you know, get you started, and you do little parts, and then those producers get to know you.
Absolutely.
And then you get bigger and bigger and bigger parts, and that's kind of how it happened.
And then loving the theater as much as you do, were you sort of sniffing around the theater scene to see what was around so you could do plays when you weren't doing other things?
A little bit, but I would go back to New York during hiatus. So I would stay out here for 3 or 4 months, and then I would go back. And then I bought a house in 78, so I stayed. And then, yes, I started.
So in the beginning, the first 5-6 years, you were going back to New York to do your theater,
right,
and then coming back here for the film and TV.
Exactly.
Which I think is a very common thing. For a long time, a lot of actors did that.
Mm-hmm.
They did 6 months in New York and 6 months in L.A., and they could live both worlds and just go back and forth and be bi-coastal.
Right. The theater scene was not that vital then. But
right.
Then in... I think 80, 81, we started an ensemble studio theater in Los Angeles. John Randolph began it.
It's wonderful.
With a bunch of us, and kind of took off from there.
And you were one of the founders in New York as well?
I was one of the founders in New York and one of the founders here. And it went quiet here probably in 86 or 87 and then resumed in 91 or 92, and now it's just stayed strong.
And there's an amazing... I was on the site just looking around because, as I was telling you before the show, that I've had Gates McFadden on, and
uh-huh.
I have her on talking about the new play she's directing next uh-huh. week with Denise Crosby, who's in it, who's been on the show many times. And I just went to go take a look at the site, and the troupe is amazing.
Isn't it?
A super group of talented people.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, is it fun? Now, Nick, that must be right up your alley, because there's your troupe...
Yeah.
And it's true we're not all traveling around in cars together, but there's everybody. And you get to work with the same people in shows and
yes.
do different roles. And to me, that's the most fun is to, whoever said you should never work with your friends, I don't know who that person is, because I love to work with my friends. And how fun to work with a group of actors that you trust, that you've worked with, that you believe in their talent. And then from show to show, it's like, well, who's going to play this and who's going to play that? How fun is that?
And to discover the diversity of their talent.
It's wonderful.
Because new aspects of everybody keep popping up. Man, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know she sang. I didn't know she danced. It's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
And, of course, now, you know, there's this thing whereby, you know, in order to keep a theater company going, you've got to have new blood. And so now, you know, we're really, really the old guard. In fact, I was talking to one of the original founders, a guy called Charlie Parks, the other day, and we were saying that, you know, in the 80s we would sit around and talk about who was sleeping with who, and now we sit around and talk about who's still alive.
So true.
Now, are both of you a fan of, because Gates is, when she came on the show to talk about it, she's sort of woven a lot of her European trained mm-hmm. a little bit of the avant-garde nature into
right.
the theater. And I know that I had the two that do Crack Whore Galore that Gates directed,
oh,
that
God,
they were here.
Wonderful.
Nick Kazan was in here talking
right.
about his show. Both kind of very avant-garde theater.
Yep.
So is that something that's right up both of your alley as well that's fun to do?
It's more up Nick's alley than mine.
Yeah.
I'm a little more conventional.
Yeah. You got a little more of that European influence, Nick?
Yes, I'm all for, you know, covering your body in feathers and, you know,
nice.
Screaming for 7 minutes, you know, and then juggling oiled bottles, you know. That's,
oh, nice.
Yes.
But seriously, we laugh, but that's kind of Gates' thing.
Yeah,
she's got that Parisian influence.
She does, and she was trained, she was trained in clowning
yes.
and teaches it. Extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Me too.
Because to me, the fun of theater is there are no rules. So at one minute you can do Our Town, and the next minute you can do Crack Whore Galore, and it's
right.
all good, and the same company can do them both.
Yep.
And you can respect the traditional and the classic, and at the same time embrace the new and the avant-garde, and it's all okay. You don't have to specify we're this kind of company. Just a company says everything.
As long as the work is grounded.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Crack Whore Galore had all kinds of stuff going on, but it was grounded.
Yeah.
It was solid. It was dug in so they could go anywhere. What I'm not so fond of is stuff that's very ephemeral, where people aren't really landed. They're going out of their brains and not their guts at all.
Yeah. Because that's what I like to call art for art's sake. It's just
yeah.
artsy to be artsy.
Let's be different.
But it's not
okay.
really saying
different
anything.
Different than what and why.
Right, exactly. Let's just be... And now we're back to Nick, and he's juggling the oil bottles covered in feathers while he screams
well,
for seven
you know,
minutes.
He's got a good... He was raised as an Englishman, so there you go.
Right. You need some relief from
it's
that.
It's his
oh,
form
God.
Of Rio.
Yeah.
Right. Now, where did you grow up, Jenny?
I grew up in Central New York State and Northwestern Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. So Northeast.
Yep.
Okay, so that can be, that's a little, that's New England.
Yep.
That can be a little like the same kind of upbringing
that's
in a lot
right.
of ways. I'm a Connecticut girl.
Yep.
So I know,
so
I know very much what that's about.
There's a head.
There's a head. Yes, I do. I have 27 Oxford shirts. I do know.
Yeah.
I went on a cruise to New England a couple of years ago.
New England?
Yeah, because we went to New York, and then it was the changing of the leaves. So it was New York, Boston, Portland, New Brunswick, and Halifax.
Oh, yum.
It was beautiful. We get off the cruise ship in Portland, and the lady from the L.L. Bean store makes a beeline for me out of the however many thousands of people getting off the ship. You know, we're having a sale at L.L. Bean right now. I'm like, oh, my God. She clocked me as Connecticut, right?
Oh,
there,
honey.
I can't even hide it. So
give me a button down and a plaid shirt.
Exactly. But then on the inside, I'm in feathers and I'm juggling oil bottles. And I think kind of you are too a little bit, Jenny, and that's the fun.
If it was necessary. I could be forced to.
But
do
don't
it.
You think in your career that's helped, because you can play nice little ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can play crazy parts.
Oh, yeah.
And it just depends on what they call for.
Yep.
You know, some actors are too scared to play the crazy parts, and some actors are too kind of avant-garde appearing to be able to play the nice lady next door. And you're lucky that you can run the gambit of that.
I'm very fast on my feet. I really can, and I loathe rotten people so much that I get sheer joy out of revealing every aspect of their nastiness.
Nice.
So I can attack those with great gusto.
And you, Nick, you just look like a nice Englishman.
That's
but
right.
Then I can imagine that in there are a lot of crazy characters that can come out of you.
Yes, I have moments. Yes, it's true.
So tell me a little bit about Bakersfield Mist and what it was that attracted you both to the show.
It's a wonderful story based on a real story of a woman who was living about 25 years ago in a trailer park in San Bernardino, bought as a joke a painting that she thought was particularly ugly for a friend of hers. And their friend didn't want it, and then she discovered that it might possibly be a Jackson Pollock. And she kept trying to find more and more about Jackson Pollock, and eventually borrowed money from her brother, and they flew out an art expert from New York to come to this trailer park to have a look at this painting. The play is the meeting of the art expert from New York and the trailer park lady with her painting. And which is a terrific setup, but the way that Stephen, what's his name?
Sachs.
Often. Thank you.
It's often Stephen Sachs.
Who is, you know, the artistic director of The Fountain. He called us up about 3 years ago, and he said, you know, I've started writing this play, and this is the story, and it really is beginning to sound like you guys. So I'm going to write it for you.
It's great.
Yeah.
Which was fabulous, you know.
Never happened. It's fabulous.
You know, and then about a year later, we read through, you know, a version of it. And Jenny was immediately taken by it and saw it. And I, of course, I tend to not be that sort of wildly enthusiastic about things. Or I'm so over the top about things that nobody else cares about that it's almost a surreal experience.
Yes. On the money, honey.
Yeah. You know, that sort of bizarre English addiction to things that are so singular that really when you look at it, it's like a psychotic breakdown, or at least a, you know, an appalling
sheep
obsession.
And garters.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, guys who fly kites every week, you know, that I don't know what that had to do with
no.
this play. But the play itself has gradually formed, you know, and we've now been running. We are now in our fifth month here.
It's wonderful.
And it basically sells out every night, and it really satisfies audiences because it's not just about art. It's about who says that something is art, and why is it so difficult for somebody who doesn't have any money to suddenly proclaim themselves the owner of a masterpiece? Obviously, this guy believes that nothing that comes from or even sits around this woman has any value at all. It is not only snobbish, it's a sort of economic form of...
Classism.
Yes, I mean, it's moneyism in a way, you know. And And it gets into all that, and it gets into who judges and who doesn't judge.
And it's very funny. And
it
really
funny.
Profane, yeah. At least on my part.
Yes,
but that happens all the time, that people from all different kind of backgrounds wind up finding something in an attic or inheriting something in an estate situation, and then it's a Chippendale, or it's a Louis the 14th, or it's this, or it's, and they have no idea what it is. And you're right, people expect that a certain kind of people has a certain kind of thing, and that other people shouldn't have nice things. And you're right, that's when you were telling me about the show and first describing it, Nick, that's exactly what I was thinking, that he would come and think, there's no way she's got a Jackson Pollock.
Right.
The woman on whom this was based, the character is not based on her. It's the event. It's the guy that was flown out and the fact that she lived in a trailer park and bought this painting for $5, something like that. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Really?
Yeah. But that's a true story.
That is a true story, but the characters are created characters by Stephen. And it's remarkably funny and remarkably touching in places, and you don't think that these two people can ever, ever, ever find any meeting ground, but they do. They're like billiard balls that kind of click off of each other from time to time in the most unexpected ways.
And also, you start out with basically two stereotypes.
Right.
The New York snob.
The snobby New Yorker, right.
And the trashy
and the trailer trash lady.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's expected to be, dumb and ignorant and a hick, and he's expected to be snobbish and cold and unfeeling.
And kind of a jerk.
And what happens is that they start revealing stuff about each other because of their interaction, because they're caught in this thing.
The onions get peeled back and back.
And it's fascinating because for an audience, you start out with something, and the beginning of this thing is pretty basically funny. And you go, this is fun, this is all right, here's the dumb trailer trash lady, here's the snotty guy and it just, they get sucked into this battle between these two human beings, and it's really fun. I mean, it's a, sometimes, especially in theater, you say to somebody, they say, what are you in, is it any good? And you go, yeah, no, it's great, come and have a look, But this, I have no reservations about this at all. I mean, it's one of the few things I've ever had in my life where I go, come and see it. You are going to love this, And I have not yet been proved wrong.
Because that's interesting. As creative people, sometimes we're worried. Should we invite our friends?
Yeah, exactly.
Are our friends going to like it?
Exactly.
Even if we're in love with it, we're not sure all our friends are going to like it.
Every single performance, there are people outside when we come out waiting to talk to us and tell us how much they loved it.
It's wonderful.
How much they love the play, how much they love the characters, how moved they were by it, how informed they were by it. Stephen Sacks is an extraordinary writer. The writing of this piece is really remarkable, and all the sections about art are just fabulous.
And isn't that sort of why we do what we do? Because you hope you're going to get excellent material to work with, a wonderful group of people to work with, and then the best of all, that every night as you're leaving the theater, there are people who were moved by the performance forever and want to talk to you about it. I mean, that's really why we do what we do.
And who have come back 2 and 3 times, bringing friends, or who have said, they had tickets and they were at a dinner party, and people said, what, you haven't seen Bakersfield Mist? Have you seen Bakersfield Mist? And it's based on the name of a Pollock painting, which is Lavender Mist, but the play takes place in Bakersfield, so it's called Bakersfield Mist.
And Bakersfield is one of those places that sometimes you think, did they film Deliverance here?
Right, exactly.
It's one of our places.
It's kind of hicky country.
It's fantastic. It's the Midwest in the middle of California.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, it's the Sheena Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break, then we're right back with more of the fabulous Jenny O'Hara and Nick Ullett right after this.
Discovering Sheena Metal.
For God's sakes, do as I say and not as I do.
Why do I take comfort and misery? Put on a
she may be young and beautiful, but life can suck even for her. You've been in love, right? Critically acclaimed singer-songwriter Brittany Elizabeth reveals it all in her authentic and powerful CD, Breathe In, now available on Desert Sunrise Records. See, hear, and buy Brittany Elizabeth at BrittanyElizabeth.com.
Minarik Guitars. Made for artists who refuse to compromise. The Minarik Lotus.
Awarded the Gold Award by World Magazine.
The Minarik Inferno.
Awarded the Editor's Pick by Guitar Magazine.
The Minarik Studio Extreme Series guitars play as well as the Super Custom Series.
Minarik guitars are played by Lemmy and Phil, as well as of Coheed and Cambria.
Go to MinarikGuitars.com to check out these guitars and the stars who use them.
M-I-N-A-R-I-K guitars.com.
Discovering
Shina Metal.
Save it for the fan message boards, people. The LA Women's Theater Project presents Jane Chambers' theatrical stage play Last Summer at Bluefish Cove, directed by DJ Cox, October 21st through October 30th. Friendship, love, and self-reflection. This is one play you won't want to miss. For tickets, go to www.lawomenstheaterproject.org or call 818-471-9100. The LA Women's Theater Project presents Last Summer at Bluefish Cove.
During the past two decades, one songwriting contest has gotten your songs published, placed, licensed, recorded, and sold. It's the songwriting event with real-world rewards and opportunities, the Goodnight Kiss Music and Song Competition. Prizes, radio play, audition for producers, music supervisors, festival gigs, and even a recording contract. Go to www.goodnightkiss.com. The Goodnight Kiss Music and Song Competition. Goodnightkiss.com.
Thursday nights, Sheena Metal hosts Carneyville. LA Talk Radio's Sheena Metal presents Carneyville at the Other Door Bar in NoHo. Great live bands in a bar that's a great hangout. Live on stage,
Freebo, Hollywood Outsiders, Fallen Riviera, Wayfarer, Foul Play, Charlie King Band.
The Other Door Bar, 10437 Burbank Boulevard. Look for the sign that says Bar. Thursdays, 8 p.m., $5 cover, The Other Door Bar. Carneyville, hosted by
Sheena Metal.
Sheena Metal.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Secretly, I laugh.
Marino da Silva, one of the greatest guitarists of our time. Satisfaction from Voodoo Charm, the album, on iTunes now. Discover the magic at marinorocks.com. Welcome to his rock and roll universe.
I can't get no satisfaction.
I'm glad that you don't know.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio, two members of Merle Haggard's band, have released their first album called A Couple of Strangers.
Yeah, my voodoo woman's calling out to me.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio on iTunes from Colosio Publishing.
So don't bother knocking, come on in, the party's rocking, I wonder if I do.
Your period is a vital sign. If you are a woman under 40 and your period has stopped or is irregular, you may have a condition known as premature ovarian failure, or POF. Other symptoms of POF include infertility, hot flashes, and fatigue. If you have any of these symptoms or know someone who does, please visit our website for more information at www.pofsupport.org. Remember, your period is a vital sign.
Brought to you by the International Premature Ovarian Failure Association.
Red Lodge, the new album by award-winning artist Danielle Agnew. Red Lodge, nominated as Best Folk Recording at the 2008 NAMI Awards. Red Lodge, the new album by Danielle Agnew on Maurice the Fish Records. Available online at cdbaby.com and Danielle Agnew, EGNEW.com.
Johnny Harmonic.
This is Johnny Harmonic. The album is We All Love Bright Shiny Things. Johnny Harmonic, We All Love Bright Shiny Things on iTunes from Colosio Publishing.
friend, this is Renee Barnett for Night Vision Radio. In my work in television and film production, we use night vision photography to illuminate what's hidden in the dark. And that's what we try to do at Night Vision Radio. We shine a light on the secret, the strange, and the unusual. On NVR, you'll hear from the experts and the experiencers who'll help us understand and expose these strange and sometimes dark subjects. Please join me right here Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Time for Night Vision Radio and check us out on nightvisionproductions.com. Real people, real stories, firsthand. Night Vision Radio.
You've just found the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show. The wonderful Jenny O'Hara and Nick Ullett join me all this hour. Their film is Bakersfield Mist. Now, did I say film?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry about that. Their play, Bakersfield Mist. That's how you know it's live, people. Sometimes my brain gets jumbled. Now at the Fountain Theater through December 18th. And what a fantastic show. I can't wait to see it. It sounds terrific. Well, what is the difference, both of you? Jenny, you go first. What's the difference in doing a play with just one other person as opposed to doing a play with a cast of 10 or 20? I mean, energetically, it's a very different thing to do a two-person show.
It's really, this is exhausting, and it's really vigorous. It's all go. You hit the stage running, and it just goes up and up and up and up and up. So it's, it's a heavy load. But it's also, I haven't done a two-character play with anybody else. Nick and I have done little snippets of things together. But this was like, from my point of view, a day at the beach. I've never had such an easy rehearsal process.
So this is really your first two-character show that's been in a long
ever.
Run.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
First ever, and the first of any substance with Nick. And it's been just terrific. It's so easy. You know the other person so well. You know you can count on them. They know when you're in trouble, when you're not. You can, if somebody drops the ball, the other one can pick it up very easily. It's the best experience, and we lie around in bed running lines.
That's a joy, right? Because not because two creative people, just because you're in love and married, doesn't necessarily mean you work well together, and a lot of couples don't. And the fact that you both do, I think, is really a gift, because how fun that you have such a nice creative working relationship, too. Is it?
It is. I mean, there's something enormously enjoyable, actually, just about going to work together.
Yeah.
You know? We get in the car, we go there, we run a couple of lines, you messed this up last night. No, I didn't. Yes, you did.
Right.
And you have all those sort of little things, and then Jenny gets there, and we always have a fight call an hour before we do it, because we have a fight in this. In fact, that's the one thing I wouldn't really recommend to anybody, is to be in a play with your wife who has a very large knife at one point.
Oh.
You know?
It's a real knife.
And it's a real knife.
But it's good that it's just in the play. And
that's
that
right.
You trust each other so much outside of the play.
So far.
Because maybe there's couples that would be a little scared if there was a scene with a knife, even if it was on stage.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, that, you know.
I can see that, yeah.
did you know, when did you first work together, and when did you know that you had this kind of neat creative synergy between the two of you?
Probably last June.
Is that the first time that you really did something together?
We did a little.
We did
a two-act play,
a one-act play
together that was very inconsequential. And then we did The Last Seder. But there was one scene that we had together that was sweet and easy and romantic on a bench at night.
Oh, that was nice, yes.
It was very nice.
But that was it. You know, we met in the Ensemble Studio Theater.
It's wonderful.
And we were actually set up by a Cuban-American playwright, Eduardo Machado, deliberately set us up, told me that Jenny would be a terrific director for a play that I'd written, told her that I wanted to have an affair with her.
Oh, yeah. At least he told you the truth.
No.
No.
Nick knew nothing about it.
Oh, okay.
He made it all up, and I said, no, I'm just coming out of a relationship. I'm not interested. And then to speak quite frankly. A few weeks later, I thought, well, I could get laid.
He does just want to have an affair with
her. Yeah, so tell him okay. So the next thing is I get a phone call from Nick saying that he's written this little play that we're going to do in a play festival, and Eduardo had suggested I directed it. So I thought Nick was making his move, which he never made because he had no idea that it was being set up.
I didn't know I was making a
move. So you thought little play was code.
Right. I did.
And I took the play to her, and she, of course, thought the play was the least funny thing she had ever read in her entire life.
Ever.
And the only
But I wasn't doing anything else, and I thought it was Nick's move, so I said, all right, I'll direct her. So then we had auditions, and I was sitting there saying, my God, all right, we're having auditions. The first actor that read, I actually fell off my chair. I was laughing so hard. It was so funny. I was just in a really bad mood. The first time I read it.
You were just upset that it wasn't code for sex.
Well, no. It was just, you know, I was coming up this other relationship.
Right.
And I was like,
So the first time you worked together was you directed something that Nick had written.
Right, yeah. And then it did eventually, you know, lead to a relationship. But we never knew that we'd been set up for something close to a year. And it came up out of the blue.
Conversation.
You know, I said, God, well, at least, you know, Eduardo, you know, told me that you really wanted to direct this play. And she said, I didn't want to direct it. Eduardo told me he wanted to have an affair with me. I said, I didn't want to have an affair with you. You were this dramatic actress. You were always screaming and yelling and bossing people around.
And snot came out of your nose on a regular basis.
When
you were crying.
We discovered that we'd been set up.
That's interesting how he knew, and he also knew exactly what to tell each one of you to get you to go.
Isn't that? That's why he's a good playwright.
Yeah.
Eduardo is a wonderful playwright.
That's fantastic. Well, I think that a good playwright, and certainly Stephen Sacks falls into that, has to have a certain amount of intuition. And I think a good director, I mean, actors we know have to, because we have to step into other people and become them.
Right.
But I think sometimes we underestimate how much a director has to have good intuition to sort of sometimes get actors to do what he thinks they should do without even letting them know they're doing
it.
Just sort of guiding them energetically in that direction.
Yeah.
Right, because nobody likes a pushy director who yells at everybody and screams. And as actors, I think creative people tend to recoil from that, and then they won't give anything that they should. So
Well, it just shuts down your instrument.
Right.
You feel that you're in danger, in emotional danger.
And a good director kind of peels the onion, like you said, Jenny, opens you up, and then before you know it, you're just doing it. And it's exactly what he or she had envisioned, and you didn't even know that that's what you were doing.
Yep.
And then you just are.
And Stephen is a wonderful director.
Stephen
directed
is a wonderful
it as well.
Director.
And it becomes a tight group, right? I mean,
except
for the crew and the rehearsal process, it's just the three of you.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work. It doesn't. You don't have you're not in the scene, so you go sit and work on your lines. I mean, it's all intensive.
There's no
right.
There's no downtime.
That's actually one of the great things about a two-hander, which is that you don't have any downtime. So once that play starts, from the moment that the lights go down, you're going, and nothing stops you until you take your bow and you leave.
You cannot get off the
train. Which is great. Actually, when you think about it, because you don't have to go off stage, you don't have to sit down, read the book for 10 minutes, and then go back on and go, oh my God, I've forgotten what was happening. You know, you don't go through any of those other things. You're literally involved in what is a real-time experience.
Exactly.
For that hour and a half.
Right.
And that's kind of thrilling.
That's the time that those people have to reach the end.
You know,
right. And not only for you, but for the audience.
Yeah.
Because you
everybody's
never leave.
On the same journey.
So everybody's there from the curtain up to curtain
down.
Later
when you resume. Yes, exactly.
Right. Or you sit and think, I wonder when that actor's coming back. And then you forget about them and get into what's going on. Then they come back. It really is. You're right. It's a journey. And it's an intense energy exchange between the audience and you.
It is.
For that entire time. And as an actor, it must be just a complete endorphin ride. Because you're in high performance mode, which means that physiologically, emotionally, spiritually, you have to be right in that moment
from the get-go
for that whole period of time. And especially if you're delivering lines from a very intense writer, then, I mean, you are really in that moment with those words through that entire journey. And that's, I mean, you must be elated after every show.
It is. It's a fabulous feeling. And for Maude, the stakes are really high. Really, really high. For Lionel, the stakes get high later on in the play. But for her, from the get-go, she's got to convince him. She's got to, it's her last chance.
Now, what was it you liked about her, Jenny? Because Nick said you liked the play right away. Mm-hmm. So what was it about the play that grabbed you right away?
Well, I like the relationship between them, but I also like the reality of Maude. She's right out there on the edge, but she's also really rooted, and she's a fighter. She fights for what she wants. She fights for what she believes in. She's tricky. She goes around corners and tries to see another way in, another way to solve the problem, another way to get what she wants, another way to do it. She's constantly interesting, and she's a person of merit, eventually. She's a person of principle.
Well, and it's interesting how, Nick, you said that you kind of described her as the dumb trailer park lady, but she's not dumb. She just doesn't have the breeding. If she's always going around trying to find, she's obviously very intelligent.
You'll find out as we go that all kinds of stuff you thought about Maude is not true, and that she knows so much more than you think she knows about Jackson Pollock, about painting, about him, all kinds of stuff. But it comes off in layers. It's just little bits as the play goes on, and that's what's fabulous about it, because he could leave at any minute.
Right.
You know, it's the whole journey for her is to make sure that this guy gives her the validation. He must say that this is a Jackson Pollock. I mean, it's really, really important, because all sorts of people have said, no, it isn't. And now she's got the big guy. So the stakes are enormous, and it makes it really fun, you know.
And you learn as the play goes on how enormous they are for her and why. It isn't money. It isn't just the painting. It's a whole bunch of other stuff that I won't talk about, because it's part of the enjoyment of the play.
So, Nick, what was it for you? Because you said when you first read it, you weren't as over the moon as Jenny was about it. When did it hit you that you were crazy about it, and what was it that made you?
Well, actually, it didn't until... when was it? April of this year?
Yeah, you're such a whore. It was.
We were
the first audience.
Okay.
Well, we did. We had never read it except around a kitchen table with Stephen and his wife and Jen and me, and then the Orlando Shakespeare Theatre holds a play reading festival every year in Orlando, and they flew us with Stephen down to Orlando to do two readings of this play in this festival. And we thought, well, great, we get to go to Orlando, you know, and...
On the road, Nick, on the road.
Yes. Yeah, Nick got to go on the road. That's what it. I was thinking, too.
Exactly.
You know, I'll pack my little stage. It'll fit in my suitcase.
Motels, here I come. You know. So we go there, and, you know, we sit in this motel room, and we read through it a couple of times, and which we hadn't done any rehearsal or anything. Well, obviously, we'd read it, but... So we read it out loud a couple of times, and Stephen said, yes, that, you know, you could go easy on that, and that was it. And then we go over, and we sit in this small theater, and these people file in, and we do this play, and they fall apart. I mean, they love this play. They started screaming and yelling and cheering, and in the middle of it, they start applauding us in the middle of this play.
Yeah.
And we're going... Whoa, you know, and I react very well to audience response.
I guess. You know. I gathered that when Jenny called you a whore.
As do we all. I am a slut myself.
Come on, I started out life as a comic, basically. So,
right.
You know, give it to me.
But sometimes it's hard to really tell how you feel about something.
It is.
When you're trying to develop a characterization, until you see outside people that are not as invested in it. And how they react to it. It gives you a whole different feeling.
To me, there are three steps. The first step is when you read it and you have one impression of it. The second is when you read it out loud with somebody else. And the third is when the audience becomes the other partner in it. And there's information to be gained on each level.
And this is actually part of this. I think you could probably do it badly and it would still work as a play. But it's a tricky play to pull off because...
Well,
it's about a man saying yes or no. That's it, basically. That's the plot, you know. So there's a sort of point at which the audience goes, you know, tell us, enough already. And so the way that Stephen has carefully allotted pieces of information. So the audience really keeps with this. And as actors, you have to make that work. You have to hold that tension, keep that thread pulled just right. Pull it too hard, it'll break. You'll lose them. Don't pull it enough, they get bored. It's got to be exactly right. And that's fun for two people, you know. And especially two people who know each other as well as Jenny and I do, because we literally are playing with a helium balloon that we just tap from side to side and keep it alive, you know. It's a thrilling thing to do.
And do you think that's why it's been such a wonderful word-of-mouth show, is that the description in a paragraph of what it's about compared to what it's really about when you see it blows people away because they go thinking, okay, a lady finds a painting, an art expert comes to tell her if it's really the painting or not.
Right.
And that sounds like it could be interesting.
Yeah.
But then when you actually are seeing the show and all the little nuances and the subplots and the characterizations are coming out, and wow, then you realize what you're really dealing with. And people are, I think sometimes the best thing you can do with a play or a film is to almost undersell it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you watch a movie trailer, it's completely oversold, or you read something on a theater site for an upcoming play. Every good part about it is in the review, and then you go see it and you don't see much else.
Right.
But sometimes when they just hint around at what something is about, then when you go and see it, you don't really have any expectations, and that's the real magic, is when it's unfolding right in front of you and you don't know what's going to happen.
As long as you can thread that line, because if it's not interesting enough, people may not come at all.
Right, and so, that's the hard thing, right?
Yeah. But they do, because the word of mouth is so wonderful, and I think people don't go into detail with one another, but they just say, you have to see this. You have to see. I love acting with Nick. I'm having the best time.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. I think that's the most beautiful thing.
It's so easy. There's just no
effort.
It's
really fun. And it doesn't stop. You know,
it's
we give each other notes.
Yes, all the time.
You know, if you do this, I think this will land much better. You know, and then we try it out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And sometimes there's, no, I'm not doing that.
I see where you're going, but no, I don't want it.
Is it interesting because you live together, you spend a lot of time together, and now you have these characters that are living with you too, that you're doing on a regular basis many times a week. That must be kind of interesting. It's like, well, we've added a couple more in the house now, and we're kind of carrying them along for a while, because you are always discussing the play, always running lines, always refreshing and talking about the play. And the play is you two, and you two are you two. So that must be kind of very interesting and fun, but also kind of interesting to carry them around with you.
I don't know. I feel like I drop Maud.
Do you?
Yeah, and then pick her up on Thursday.
Okay. Except for brief discussions.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we don't talk about the play very much, except when we're doing it, those sort of 4 days. And as Jenny said, every Thursday afternoon, so that we know that we still have the words, we get into bed and we sit there on a Thursday afternoon before I take my nap, and we run the play. We run the play, and then as she's finishing off, I go to sleep.
Stephen, when we after we open Sedna, I like the actress to come in every Thursday and just do an Italiano run. You know what that is. You just run the blocking and run the lines really, really fast. No acting, just running them. And so we did that for a couple of weeks. My voice was getting very tired because I yell a lot in this play. And so I said, you know, Stephen, we don't want to do that.
We'll do it at home.
You know, we know what the blocking is.
Before Nick's nap.
It's very simple.
Right.
And it's attached to the words. So, you know, and he said, oh, okay, I'll try it. It was fine, so we never...
Well, because I think a lot of actors...
I don't want to run the play twice in a row.
Right. I agree, because I think it makes that night's performance not as fresh and exciting.
Yeah, I agree.
But a lot of actors wouldn't go home and run the lines together on their own time either.
Well,
they
can't.
They
would have to travel.
Right.
To do it, which is the point of the Italiano, so we do our own, but...
That's fantastic.
And the other thing is, you know, you come to a certain point in your life when learning this amount is tough.
Right.
you know, there's only two of you, and we've each got these arias in it where, you know, I've got like a two-page thing. She has like a three-page
stunning
thing.
Stunning, yes.
Know.
Wow.
Two-page thing about art that is staggering.
And oh. You know, and unless you really have it under your belt, that's not fun.
No.
You don't want... If there's nobody else there, you do not want to be looking for the words, you know. So to run it makes a lot of sense. You know.
Is it hard for you? Because I think it depends, like you said, on what your memory retention. Some actors have to always be refreshing on lines. Mm-hmm. Some actors, once they've learned it, they can pick up a play 10 years later and still know the lines. So is it hard that coming Thursday every week, or do you find when you run the lines that you pretty much still have it nailed?
I still have it nailed now. It's gotten much easier. But in the past, especially when I've been doing a heavy role, I would run the whole play every night before the show. And I would start with the last act and do the last act and then do the first act. So that by the time the play started, I was closer to the beginning
right,
of
it was
the
fresher.
Character's journey than in the end.
Yeah.
But this is okay. I don't need to do
that. Also, I don't remember anything. I mean,
that can be good or bad.
This has sort of followed me through my career. Even when I was on Broadway for almost 3.5 years with a musical called Me and My Girl.
Sure,
it's
a great musical.
I actually used to occasionally forget lyrics and have to make them up as the song went on, much to the hilarity of the people around me. But I find that you do a play, and now I really, you know, because I like this, so I get it right.
He starts early.
You know?
Yeah.
And I do it, and I really get the words. But if you came to me 2 days after the play closes, it's gone.
So when you're out of the zone, you're out of the zone,
it's
and
gone.
Then it goes away.
Yeah, it just goes away.
But if I came to you 2 days after the play closed and then said, will you pick up the play on a tour in a week, mm-hmm. would it come back pretty fast?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to. Otherwise, there would be no room in your brain for every show you've done.
I agree.
There'd be
so much space.
You wouldn't even drive down the street. You wouldn't know what a McDonald's was
exactly.
Because you'd have every Shakespeare play in your head. I mean,
you
your brain
to
only holds
the delete button.
Yeah, it only holds so much. Or you max out the hard disk and shut down.
Now, apparently, that isn't true, but it feels true.
What? Oh, that you do max out?
Oh, the brain.
They say the brain capacity.
They say that it's infinite. That we use what less than 10%.
Yeah. But we don't know how to get to it. It's like a secret drive that we can't access.
It's over there.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
It's all stored there somewhere. It's like our storage units.
Yeah.
We know it's all there, but we don't know where it is or how to get to
where
it.
Where is the key?
Exactly. We can't find the key to the lock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So true. You two are amazing. Will you come back and see me again?
I would love that.
It'd
be our pleasure.
Yeah.
And is there a place that you both can be found online? Then I'm going to give all the theater information. Do you have websites?
Nikki does, but I have now... purchased my domain or selected my domain, but I haven't made a website yet.
But you're on Facebook, though.
I'm on Facebook.
And Nick, are you on Facebook?
Yes, I'm on
Good,
Facebook.
I'll friend you on Facebook. And you have your own website.
Yes, nickullett.com.
Wonderful. That's fantastic. And are you both very fan-friendly with people that say hi and come and see the show, want to talk to you after the show?
Absolutely.
And I love that. I think that's so important. And, of course, the show is Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, 8 o'clock, Sundays at 2 o'clock through December 18th. It's Bakersfield Mist. And it's at the Fountain Theater, which is at 5060 Fountain Avenue at Normandy in Los Angeles. And for more information on tickets, you can go to fountaintheater.com or to 323-663-1525. And theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, fountaintheater.com. Go and see this wonderful show with these two amazing actors. I know I can't wait to go see you both because you're just terrific.
Come and see us.
Thank you so much for being here. It's the Sheena Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. And if you missed any of the links for these two fantastic people or how to go see Bakersfield Mist, just hit me up at SheenaMetalExperience.com or LATalkRadio.com and I'll gladly forward those links to you. I'm Sheena. This is The Experience. It's LA Talk Radio. Quick break and we're right back with you with much more.